Present at this time are Representative Brown, Cario, Representative Martin, Parnell, and Rusendorf, myself, Representative Larson. Therefore, we do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We have a quorum. We're able to conduct business. And the business we have today are the overview presentations by the Department of Education and the University of Alaska. For time schedules, we have allotted approximately 1 hour for each of the agencies if they wish. And we will also then name the members of the finance subcommittees that will be working on the budgets. So with that brief introduction, are there any other comments by any other members of the committee? Please note that Representative Hanley has joined us also. And I believe I have named all the rest. Chairman McLean is excused at this time. She is out of town. So with that, Commissioner Covey. There he is.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Covey. I'm Commissioner of Education, and I'm here today to provide you with a brief overview of the Department of Education. And I would like to, with your permission, Mr. Chairman, invite Alan Barnes, who's the Executive Director for the Post-Secondary Commission, to come forward with me. And after I do a brief overview of the Department of Education, Mr. Barnes could share with you his overview for post-secondary, and then we would be happy to entertain any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you. So,
okay,
you wish to go through your overview, and then at the end of both views, then we'll have the questions.
If that's
and
acceptable,
that's what you'd like. Sure.
Yes. Okay.
Please note, Representative Hoffman is present also.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I begin by introducing some of my staff who are here today. Mike Maher, our Deputy Commissioner, is behind me. Dwayne Guiley, who's our Finance Director. And Gary Bader, who's our Director of Administrative Services. Sheila Peterson is also here. She's our Special Assistant, as is Karen Crane, the Director for the Libraries, Archives, and Museums. And I hope I have mentioned all of them. Very briefly, review as to the organization of the Department of Education. We have a number of divisions. We include Centralized Correspondence Study as part of our department program, Alaska Vocational and Technical Center, which is located in Seward, Mount Edgecombe High School, and within the department itself, we have the divisions of Educational Program Support, Administration, a School Finance Division. And we also have, under library, we have libraries, archives, and museums in one division. And in addition to that, we also include the Alaska Council of the Arts under the Department of Education. We have approximately 380 employees spread around the state, most of them located in Juneau, with Anchorage being the second largest group. I'd like to move on, if I may, to just a few of the things that the department has been focusing on during the last year and where we're at now in accordance to them. Certainly the major focus, one of them, has been our Alaska 2000 Education Initiative. And as we get into the legislative package, which we will be introducing, I'll share more detail with you in regard to that. Generally, I would say that this has been a year-long public process in which we've engaged. It's the most thorough of any of the education initiatives that the state has undergone in some time. We've tried to craft this Alaska 2000 program carefully and remove and take out of it the most controversial educational issues that that we've encountered and some that have plagued the state and seem to be very difficult to resolve. We've tried to shy away from those and instead present an agenda which has a broad base of support and something which you as a legislature can effectively take action on to seek some improvements. We're seeking in this package to position K-12 education for a very effective future. And ultimately, in closing on that, I would say our intent here is to align a very talented workforce that we have in our educational system more closely with public will so that we can produce a more effective educational program. In addition to that, we've tried hard in the department to address accountability issues. We've gone out, surveyed districts, found out what they want from us, what types of services we deliver that they use, what type they don't use, so that we can provide them better service. We've taken a hard look at our travel. We've cut, during the last cycle, we cut our travel costs by 25%. We've worked closely with school systems on this Alaska report card process that school districts are using. And one other thing, which will be coming back to you at some other time, is we've been making some significant progress, we believe, in the chart of accounts issue and how districts report financial information to you. We know that for a number of years you've been concerned because you couldn't make accurate comparisons from one district to another on the use of funds. I think you'll be pleased when you see what progress we've made there. In terms of other issues, we have Alaska has taken a leadership role in the states in terms of the Americans with Disabilities Act. We are progressing at a faster rate and dealing very effectively with this issue as compared to most states. In fact, as we're told, the executive order, which our state has produced for ADA, is being used as a model by many other states as they begin focusing on this issue. And one other area that we've been working on is part of Alaska 2000, but I think it's one of the most significant recommendations, and it will drive a lot of change, and that is setting standards for student performance. I think what we will see with the completion of these standards is substantial change in the structure of our school systems, the way we organize. In effect, what the standards will drive is a reorganization of schools to help ensure that students achieve at the levels that we agree they should. The standards that we're setting will reflect cultural and ethnic diversity of all of our students. They will also be very high standards. We're talking world-class standards. Our belief, and it's been supported all over the state, is that all of our children can learn at very high rates. Most of our children in Alaska can achieve world-class performance levels. And so there is no disparity there. And with that understanding and agreement, we are right now, as we talk, working to establish these standards for 10 different subject areas, which we will do over the next 3 years. Next year at this time, we will be back to the State Board in January with seeking final approval for standards in math, science, language, arts. And we'll follow them up with 7 more areas. All of this will be done through the regulatory process. We're going to give a lot of focus on public input so that we're on solid ground all the way with these. We're real excited about this. I guess, real quickly, some of the budget highlights, and I won't go into too much detail. In fact, I'm going to try to be pretty general in my comments, and I would answer any questions, however, later. The FY94 budget was below the FY93 authorized budget by $6.8 million. This figure does include post-secondary education. The department itself is down 6 full-time positions in our new budget proposal. We see a foundation program increase of $18.6 million in general funds and a 3% student enrollment statewide increase. That's an approximation at this time. The foundation program, in terms of impact aid, will increase $1.2 million, and we project that we will need a supplement of $6.4 million. School debt retirement is down by almost $28 million in debt retirement funds. Pupil transportation is down $2.6 million. Funding at that level will require proration of transportation costs to districts. Historically, we have been funding pupil transportation somewhere between 90 and 100% annually. This level of funding is not 100% funding. It's $2.6 million below that. It brings us in, I'm not sure exactly where in the percentage range, but it's over 90%. We're looking at proposals that will create some attractive incentives for school districts to share services and to become more cost-effective. And one other thing in our budget, we do have an increase for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission of about $25,000 to address increased legal fees for them.
Let me interrupt just a second.
Yes, sir.
We had a request today that we'll ask the questions at the end of the presentation.
Okay.
I would move then, Mr. Chairman, real quickly to a very brief overview of our legislative package. The legislative package, which we will be introducing, the governor will actually hold a press conference on this tomorrow afternoon at 1:30. And at that time, we will share all the detail. I believe that the bills do go to both bodies tomorrow morning as well. Very briefly, there are four bills, three concepts. The first bill is an omnibus bill. It has five components. We're looking in that bill at a phase-in from the current 180-day to a 200-day school year by the year 2000. A second component is we'll address moving money from the education trust fund, which currently exists. Percentage of the earnings from that fund we're asking be placed in a school improvement fund, which was established about two legislatures ago but was never funded. We're asking that money be placed there and so that we have access to that money for research and development of new program ideas. And the way we would like to approach this is to make funding available to school districts in the forms of grants to address new and innovative ideas. That way we can conduct the research at the classroom level all over the state. We're excited about this. We think there's great potential in that many of the ideas we're going to need to create and renovate our system could be handled in this way. So we're hopeful in this regard. Another component is the establishment of advisory school boards. By statute, REAA school districts for many years have been required to have advisory school boards. There is significant interest for greater parent involvement and influence in the public school system. This bill would address that for urban districts. And we checked the language. Representative Larson asked a question yesterday. Would these advisory boards be appointed or would they be elected? The legislation that we'll introduce is silent on that. So it could either be appointed by the school board, it could use an existing body such as a PTA or whatever. There is latitude in that. Another component is to create a much greater focus on the acquisition of tenure by teachers and principals in our public school system. And what we anticipate here is greater involvement, school boards accessing or making use of tenure review committees, which would be comprised of teachers, parents, and high school students, and other people who have an interest in the background in education, to review the application of each person as they apply for tenure and make recommendations to the local school board on whether or not they should get it. In addition to that, it does open up the door for a longer period of time. Under current statute, if tenure is not granted, these people must be dismissed at the end of 2 years. The proposal that we would present is more open-ended. If tenure is denied for some reason, the reason has to be stated in writing, first of all. If it's a problem a person can work on and resolve, a plan of improvement would address it, then they can reapply 120 days later, which would give them and the district a longer period of time to work on this. The final component in the omnibus bill is also a significant one. It's been much discussed around the state, and that is for charter schools. I won't go into the detail. You'll see that in the bill. I would merely emphasize to you at this point that a charter school is not a backdoor, a approach to creating a voucher system. It is clearly not that. It is public dollars in public schools under the control of the local school board. They retain all final authority. What it's aimed at doing is simply this: increasing the alternatives within the public system and responding more to the needs of parents and students within any given school district. I think the bill, as you'll read it, is pretty self-explanatory. I think it's been supported strongly by a number of groups. I think you'll find that as you get into it, that will surface. PTA and other groups have backed this bill. They feel that it's a good move. That's our first bill. Our second one is aimed at the Education Foundation revisions. We're trying to address a number of important concepts here, a number of things that have been floating around for a long time and have not been resolved. Included in those, a cleanup of the current area cost differential for funding schools. We're looking at a change in gifted and talented and voc ed. Essentially, what we're doing here is deregulating these areas, reducing greatly the requirements for record keeping at the school district level and at the state level. We're proposing a cap for funding of gifted and talented at 4.5% of the student enrollment, which is our state average and the national average. That would result in a reduction of about $4.5 million statewide in gifted funding. We're turning right around and putting that $4.5 million right back in the same school sites in additional support for vocational education and also deregulating that. So essentially the amount of money remains the same for school districts. They have much greater latitude than they have had in the past. And it also impacts the foundation in that special education as a program within the foundation is the fastest growing and the most difficult to regulate of any of the components. It currently comprises over $80 million in the foundation. It's a very difficult one to manage. This deregulation idea for gifted and talented has been adopted by 38 other states. Seems to be a practical solution and to addressing this issue. We have in there a hold harmless provision. We've taken a look in the foundation and we've made many changes. And we had to start where we were. We had to start with what is. And we tried to create a plan that's more equitable and ultimately treats people more fairly overall. Because of the structure of the previous foundation, some people are held at a disadvantage in this new plan, and some people actually increase their funding a little bit. We tried to take very careful measure to make sure that no one lost anything and that no one reaped a windfall out of these changes so that it was more equitable. Those who might have lost money, we're putting in a hold harmless for them to ensure that no school district would have less revenue than they have had. And as we work into this bill, and you have a chance to see the details of it, I think you'll see that it's pretty close to bringing everyone out in a neutral position. Those who might have a slight disadvantage, we're thinking that inflation during the next 3 years will address that gap and move many of them beyond. And we're structuring this in such a way that this Alaska School Price Index would be re-evaluated every 3 years to account for inflation and address that throughout our state. There's a forward funding provision in here. It's not forward funding in the traditional sense that you've known it, where other proposals historically have asked for more money, a large set-aside of funding of $600 or $800 million to guarantee funding. Instead, it's one that that is much, much simpler, and really, I think, does not create a fiscal liability for the state. We're simply saying this. If your enrollment drops next year in your school district, we're going to hold you harmless for 1 year. We're going to guarantee you level of funding at the previous year. What that will do for school districts is something they've been asking you for many years, and that is they've wanted a firm number on which to build their budgets next year. Now, our enrollment is increasing. It has been. It's going to continue by all projections. So by creating this hold harmless, we're not setting the state up for a big liability in the future. And actually, in the foundation adjustments which you have made in recent years, you've created a hold harmless in there before to assure certain districts they didn't lose money. So we feel that this is something that could be done at very little risk. It's very easy. It would be a tremendous step in the right direction for every school district in Alaska. We're also looking at phasing in a local contribution for the operating fund expenses in every school district over the next 4 years. That's a detailed proposal. I won't go into it at this time. I think it will be supportable and easy for everyone to understand and see how it works. And the final thing that we're proposing in terms of changes is we're addressing the issue of funding communities within the foundation, as that affects the level of funding school districts receive, and we'll get more into that too at some time when we do a budget presentation. Our final bill, Mr. Chairman, is on CIP, or our final two bills. One is the changes in CIP, and the fourth one would simply be the appropriations bill. You're aware of the amount that we're looking for. We're looking to reserve accounts for this funding. We're looking at making some changes in the CIP categories, the seven or eight categories we have of projects. We're proposing ultimately a change in there. Other things we're looking at in here is establishment of standardized building codes for schools all over the state. Municipal and city districts do have building codes. REAA school districts do not. We think we'll get more building for our dollar if we standardize this. We're looking at a local contribution from all school districts for school construction and all projects, again, in a phased-in way. That's the matching grant component that the governor addressed. We're looking at controls on design so that school districts do not overbuild at state expense. And we're looking for a much greater emphasis on preventive maintenance at the district level for districts to qualify for construction funds. That is it. And the fourth bill basically is simply the appropriation bill for those projects. Without going into too much time, Mr. Chairman, that's generally my overview. Okay.
Thank you. Would you like us to take questions on that portion, or would you like Mr. Barnes to go ahead and proceed with?
Mr. Barnes he's faster than I am, so it might be better if we did that and then we could open it up.
Alan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to introduce several of our staff. Doug Hannes, who's our finance director, many of you know. Diane Barris, who's our program coordinator. And I'd like to introduce Jerry Lewis, who's the executive director of the Governor's Council on Vocational and Career Ed. His budget is contained within our budget. The Alaska Post-Secondary Commission consists of, the commission itself is 14 members, several people from the Board of Regents, several people from the legislature. Senator Phillips was just appointed on the Senate side, and Speaker Barnes will be appointing someone to the House side to fill Neil Kopenen's role. The functions of the commission are threefold: consumer protection, institutional authorization, and we have a relationship with 130 different institutions in Alaska, and the student loan program, which consists of 160,000 individual loans. The second part of the commission's relationship is with the Student Loan Corporation, and there are five members on the corporation board: the Commissioner of Revenue, the Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development, Commissioner of Administration, and two members from our commission. Their single function is to provide bonding funding for the loan program. The monies that we lend to students are from bond funds and loans and repayment. They are not any longer associated with general funds, at least for this year. The commission manages about a half a billion dollar loan portfolio. We are up 260% in receivables from our FY90 level. In FY90, we collected about $20 million in loans and repayment. In FY93, we collected $52 million. That represents some positive benefits to us, that we can lend more of the money that's being repaid. But the downside is that obviously more and more students are coming into repayment. Budget highlights for FY94 is our budget for FY94 is $8,500,000. 70% of that budget is corporation receipts. The other 30%, which is general funds, are for student services such as Ritchie, Wayne, and student incentive grants. And there are no administrative charges in any of those general funds. Our FY93 authorized budget was $8,600,000, which included two RPLs. You authorized this through your legislative budget and audit committee for staff to revise accounts that had transferred incorrectly in the summer of 91. And you authorized the staff to put more people on the phones and in the written communication because of the ever-increasing number of folks who are trying to access us for a number of reasons about these tens of thousands of loans.
That was the 23 employees, I believe?
We added temporary, we had about, I think, 18 temporaries in our currently on our staff, and they are all scheduled to depart June 30th. Changes from our FY93 budget is we are asking for six permanent staffs to make up for this obvious addition of new loans. For example, in this last year, we've added 7,000 more loans. We're just asking the same people to work more and more. The lines get longer. It's no different than if you were Fred Meyers and you had 50 employees to address 10,000 customers. If you end up with 13,000 customers with the same 50 employees, and if you don't do something in technology or some other major improvements, you're going to have longer lines. That's essentially what's happening in the loan program. In FY90, the loan ratio to staff was 3,000 to 1. In FY93, it's 4,400, and it's headed to 5,500. We definitely need to consider adding more staff, not necessarily to make government grow, but it is an expanding program because more and more students are coming into repayment. For those of you around in the mid-80s, those were the high times, 17,000 loans, 16,000 loans. Those people are now coming into the repayment cycle. And it's not much different than maybe AHFC had in the mid-80s where their programs began to expand.
Can I get those statistics?
Sure. You want to repeat what I said? In FY90, we had approximately 3,000 accounts per staff person in the loan program. In FY93, it's 4,400. I would say by the FY95, it'll be 5,500 if we don't increase the staff to address these more loans coming into repayment. The award side, which I didn't mention, that is about 13,500 every year. That's fairly steady with a slight increase. And we're not asking for staff increases in the award section. It is in the repayment and collection end of it that we're looking to improve our performance. With our new billing system on the upside, we have a very low default rate. It's approximately 7% on an annualized basis. In a cumulative basis, say over a 10-year period, it's around 12%. National averages for loan programs are closer to 20 to 22%. The new system lets us identify people going into default much quicker. We were able to attach permanent fund dividend claims to the tune of $6,000 for about $6 million, much more rapidly than we had in the past. And we have a capital budget request, which includes some technology, again, to increase our contact, better contact with the borrowers. With that, Mr. Chairman, I conclude my presentation.
Thank you. Representative Navarre, then Representative Martin.
Thank you. Commissioner, on pupil transportation and reductions there, you're aware, I'm sure, that that hits disproportionately at different areas of the state. And you talked about some incentives, which I'm real interested in, so that they share some of their services. Kenai is a fairly well-managed district, and I met with them, and they've done some innovations. They've worked to get the contract down. They've reduced, the cost of their contract. And the reward that they get from the state is that they get a reduction in pupil transportation. I guess I fail to see where those types of incentives mesh very well together. Where were the, I'm looking at your position count, the six positions that you eliminated, could you just provide me with a listing of who they were and where they went?
Yes, sir, I can. If you'd like to know, I'm sure I'd have someone here that could answer the question, or I could provide it for you later at your pleasure.
That'd be fine. Later's fine. I just want to know who they were, whether they retired, whether they were they moved to another department, what happened to them. The 200-day school year by 2000 and the funding for those initiatives, is that included, I guess, in the fiscal note on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Navarre, the 200-day funding, there is no funding in our fiscal note for a 200-day school year or a phase-in of that at the current time. What we would like to advance is the issue, We believe that this issue can be addressed in a number of ways. We can tell you that at current operating costs, it takes $3 million a day to operate our K-12 system. If we continued on running schools as usual and extended out that far, that would be the additional cost. We're finding that there are many innovative ideas for a longer school year, which would be non-traditional days. They might be partnership days. They might be some school districts currently are running 200 days only for certain primary grades or elementary grades. The opportunities for business partnerships and on-the-job opportunities as part of those days would be another option. So it's not, I certainly don't want to be evasive, but I can't give you an accurate fiscal note for that. What we're interested in here is in determining is there support. We believe there's public support for this, and we'd like to initiate some action. It may simply be on an experimental basis in certain districts around the state. But the board discussed this a lot, and they didn't want to get into a position where they're advocating to the legislature that we should run out and blanketly or blindly approve this extension. But they did want to get it on the table and see if we could get some support to move in that direction. I'll be back at a later time, or if the committee would like, and discuss that particular recommendation in great detail, share with you what other states are doing. Some have approved it, some have denied it, and the reasons why. I think you'd be help in making your decision with that knowledge.
I guess I'm wondering if on the pupil-teacher ratio, whether or not, especially at the elementary school level, whether that might not be a higher priority for funding than trying to extend the school year and stretch the dollar further when we're already, I think, underfunding in a lot of areas. Your calculation of the budget synopsis, does that include the reduction of school debt reimbursement as part of the department's overall reduction?
No, that's not, I don't think it does. I think it does.
Mr. Chairman, representing those total dollars.
It's that $28 million reduction. Is that still fully funding to the statutory level debt service? In other words, when we drop from approximately $127 million down to $99 million, that's fully funding the program?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And I was aware that it was going to be fully funded, and it goes down this year because we haven't bonded, and we changed the law several years ago so that we would see this result. So the decrease of $6.8 million in education's budget is actually a $21 million overall increase?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's $15.5 million overall increase. $15
million. Okay, I just got a little note that says to remind all the speakers to identify himself by name for the record. Before I recognize Representative Martin here, I just want to emphasize the concern as expressed by Representative Navarre. If we have to make reductions, I think they should be, everyone should feel a little pain, not just one particular group. And when you single out pupil transportation for a $2.6 million reduction, you are singling out just a very small group of school districts with a big hit. And I'm giving my campaign rhetoric that before we make anyone pay more taxes, we should make everyone pay taxes. Representative Martin?
Mr. Chairman, could I just clarify one thing? And that is that school debt's always considered separate from the Department of Education's budget. I recognize that it's within the department, and the department does it. But in this calculation of $15.5 million, that's an overall increase. Does that include the reduction in school debt, which would then actually be an increase of 40-some million? Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Mike Maher, Deputy Commissioner. Representative Navarre, yeah, that's correct. It's total dollars we're talking about, so that is factored in.
Thank you.
Could you provide us with the exact information as to what has been increased and what has been decreased so that we can have a clear picture of the bottom line? Okay, Representative Martin.
Yes, sir. Commissioner Covey first. Sir, have you had a chance to evaluate one of the problems I have with the school system is the waste in administration. And I think that the law that we had years ago when we became a state and virtually copied Washington State school system, and where we only had maybe four major school districts and we required a superintendent. Well, now we have 54 school districts and we have 54 superintendents. This to me is absolutely wasteful. And has your division looked into this, and perhaps from your personal experience too as a superintendent, do you think that maybe we're going overboard, and is it justifiable to have that many superintendents and 19 of them get paid more than the governor?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Martin, I certainly have looked into it. It's been discussed extensively, and part of the difficulty in making an accurate assessment as to actual savings it lies in the fact that we do not have standard data, as I mentioned earlier. We will have that soon. What I believe, based upon the information I have and the discussions I've had and the review of this, is that there are not extremely significant savings to be had. There are savings, I've no doubt. Are we going to save 10-15% of the education budget by doing this? I doubt it. However, I think there's great value in doing this. I've explained, I've tried to fashion Alaska 2000, and as the opportunities present themselves and I can review all the components of this plan, you will find that we do want to create some incentives for consolidation and being cost effective. I've met, within the last week, I've met with virtually all superintendents in Alaska, and I've tried to explain to them in very understandable terms that they would buy a tremendous amount of goodwill from the public and from the legislature if they would initiate any changes that would reduce costs and consolidate services. Because as the economy winds down and school funding becomes more difficult to obtain, I think they're being driven to that practically at the current time. Some have made great strides and some haven't. But I think you'll see that will be occurring. We do have some outstanding examples already in our state, and I hope to see more. I'd like to work with you on that.
So we're going to keep things moving today.
Yeah. Next. Yeah. Okay. I guess what you say, significant savings, depends on the eye to beholder and how much billions you're used to playing with. The Budget and Audit Committee did a re-evaluation on that. They said only $6 million. Only $6 million to me is a tremendous amount of money. And only $6 million would definitely help us balance our problem with single-member districts, single-site districts. That usually costs us about $2 million, but then we still have another $4 million to play with to buy more teachers. So I'd really like to help you push that and help with Representative Larson's legislation. I think that this sticks out probably at the single issue that shows waste, total waste. Some of the prices that these superintendents demanding, and they have less than 250 kids, is ridiculous. Anyway, so for the university, I was concerned about the figures you gave on the default and student loans. And when we merged with I was against it, but when we were pursuing the idea of the corporations handling the student monies and loans and stuff like that, it was supposed to be the greatest thing that ever came to us as a savings for post-secondary education. And I see it's really costing us like mad. It has not reduced the loan defaulted also, and I was hopeful that if we passed the law that we can tap the permanent fund dividend check, that even makes it even worse. And I'm wondering what the division is doing. Why is it that the default rate is just as high, if not higher, than it was before we changed the system, and that now you have access to the permanent fund dividend check?
Representative Martin, I must have miscommunicated that the default rate on an annual basis is 7%. In my recollection, in the mid-80s, it was 24%. And the cumulative default rate, the cumulative default rate is 12% for the Alaska Student Loan Program.
Yes, sir.
At a national level, the National Guaranteed Loan Program is around 22%. We're probably a third, or at least a half of what it is at the national level.
The national has nothing to do with the sorts of money we have, sir, with permanent fund dividends. And the main thing is the uncollectible rate. I don't care what category you put it in. Uncollectible, 12% of our loans, when you can tap the dividend check, I can't understand. I thought that was going to help you. We know what the address is. It gave you many leads on how to reach these people that somehow ever hid themselves for a while.
First, they have to live in the state, and many of them don't live here. And secondly, they have to apply for the fund. If they don't apply, it's very, you don't attach it. So they kind of lose interest when they realize.
Is that helping you at all, having the dividend check?
Oh, you got $6 million this last fall. It helped a lot.
To know, yeah.
There's that money.
Well, when we have our subcommittee meetings, one of the meetings will be on post-secondary, and we will have opportunities at that time to go into depth and specifics. Mm-hmm. We have Representative Hanley, then Ulmer, and then Hoffman.
Burns, I just want to bring up one thing, because I've had a number of constituents on student loan problems that are running into a pattern, I guess, of people that are making their payments on time are getting sent notices saying, you know, if they $200 a month, they say you're now $200 behind, then it goes to $400, then it goes to $600, and they're still making their payments every time. And in fact, then the notice comes out, we're going to send you to a collection agency. They call me, we call, you know, your people are very helpful, but. And it says, don't pay attention to it. But some of these folks have been, I mean, one person I'm dealing with is up to like $1,800 in default according to the payments, and they have not received, it's a little scary for them, for me to tell them and for you to tell them, don't worry about it when they're still getting these increasing things and they've been paying their payments along. And I've got probably at least four people in that situation who have never been in a default situation and are still paying payments. And then we've got other people, and these are all in my district, that have for one reason or another either asked for a deferment or something like that, and boy, those really get into a problem. And the excuse seems to be the computer's a problem, but obviously it is. But anyway, I want to bring that to your attention. It's more than just one person in my district, and I know a few other people are having the same problems. We've got a fairly major problem here that's been going on for more than just 2 or 3 months. I mean, it's